Blog Talk Radio.
From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. Success or Failure is the show that gives you methods and principles to guide you to your best business and your best self. Now here are Tom Legering and Terry Munther.
Tom and Terry should be with us shortly. In the meantime, we're going to be playing a little Best of the Boomer and the Babe until they come into the studio. If they're not here in about the next 5 or so minutes, then we will terminate this broadcast. But hopefully they'll be here, and we'll continue with Success or Failure. The choice is yours with Tom and Terry. In the meantime, enjoy this information and these pieces of the Best of the Boomer and the Babe.
Welcome to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. I'm Dr. Terry Munther, along with author and entrepreneur Tom Legering. Each month, we get together on this program to discuss and share ideas for meeting personal and financial goals and improving the quality of our lives. We'll talk about the tried and true concepts found in the book Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours. And we'll hear from business partners and guests about their projects, success stories, and how they're finding their path to a happy, healthy, and successful life. We're happy that you're joining us in the conversation, and we hope you will join us by calling or emailing with your thoughts and comments at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe or www.successorfailure.org. So welcome, and I'm here with Tom Legering, and Tom and I haven't seen each other for quite a while. I've been traveling, and he's been traveling, and now we're back together in Arizona, near Sun City in Youngtown, Arizona. Tom, how you doing?
Very good. It's good to have you back, and look forward to having a great show this morning.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think we've both been busy, even though we've been apart. We've still been doing the show every month, and so we'll be talking about some things that we've been working on, and we're getting together here, getting our technical difficulties taken care of. So there we go. Okay, we're all set up. Anyway, Tom, give me a little bit about what you're doing. Last when we talked last month, you were going on a golf trip to a golf tournament, I think in San Antonio, on your motorcycle. We're getting caught up here, folks, if you haven't figured that, just like old friends getting together after about 3 months. So,
absolutely. It was World Golfers Championship, and Sin City Country Club had a regional qualifier, and then we went, our team from Sin City went, which I was a member, went to San Antonio, Texas, where we competed with all the other teams to be for the right to be on the U.S. team to compete in an amateur golf tournament against 34 other countries, which would be an absolute wonderful opportunity. Unfortunately, I did just well enough to be the first loser. So I came in second. And, of course, if the first person declines to go on an all-expense-paid trip to South Africa to compete against 34 other countries, then I would be elevated to his position.
You're the Mr. Golf first runner-up.
I think missed is the right word.
But you had fun.
It was excellent fun, and it's great competition. It's just getting started here in the U.S. It's only been here for about 4 years. But it's a great way for amateur golfers to actually get to compete and be on a U.S. team. It's just a phenomenal honor. And our club has had been involved in this for the last 3 years, and we've sent two champions. Last year, Bill Kreitzer went to to Thailand, and the year before we had a member of our team that went off to Spain, and they had a golf tournament over there. So it's just a wonderful thing. And then this year, a gentleman is going to David is going to be able to go to South Africa.
Wow.
We're really proud of all the different clubs that we each year are getting at least one champion in.
Yeah,
so
that's terrific.
We look forward to it.
Well, and of course, as I've told you, I've been up in the Great Northwest.
Yes.
For almost 5 months now, I think.
At the Lakeview.
At the Lakeview House, yes. We were very fortunate. We've talked about in previous shows about being up north with family and friends and then doing some different things. Excuse me with my voice here, doing some different things that we wanted to do and finally getting a place that was on the lake and as part of our retirement. And so now, obviously we're just very blessed and fortunate. We've got a great place and with trees and lake. And then, of course, we come down here to Arizona and
for
the golf and the weather. We're fortunate, we're blessed, and we're loving retirement. We're loving being baby boomers. And, of course, we're on Boomer and Babe Blog Talk Radio, so it's a natural fit. And we've covered a lot of topics. For those of folks that may just be joining in, Tom and I do this show every month, and it's loosely or tightly based upon the book that he co-authored with his son, Successor Failure, The Choice is Yours. It's a quick and easy workbook, 6 chapters, really some life lessons along with business lessons so people can find their path to success. Whatever that may be and whatever age they may be. And so each month we talk a little bit about that at least, as well as what's going on with us here and hopefully helping people set new goals and find the success in their life that they want to find. So, but on that topic, I told you I was looking at some things and doing some research, and I came upon a CD that I had used back in my previous life as an educator, educational administrator, and purchased it, actually, I don't know how many years ago now. And the author's name is Daniel Pink. And Daniel Pink is an author, lecturer, analyst, business consultant. He's got books out. I would encourage everyone to go to his website, danielpink.com. Just some interesting guy, interesting life, and some concepts that renewed in me, again, that always kind of brings us back to topics we're discussing.
Right.
And I watched the CD, got on the website, and was saying, I still like his ideas. And I think it was around 2006 when I purchased this, so there wasn't all of the information about the economy that we're in now.
Right.
So things were still on the upticks. But aside from that, I thought a lot of what he had to say still had some terrific merit. And for educators, I'll tell you how I got into it, kind of give a premise, and I hope we can just kind of discuss it and maybe other folks will join in. We've got Pete here with us today who's producing the show, but also from Boomer and Big Blob Talk Radio. Hope, Pete, you can join in with us on some of the discussion. What Daniel Pink says in the CD, it's called A Whole New Mind. And he says, you know, for educators, let me start there. When we're growing up, and we're growing up as our age group, boomers or past boomers, we were raised with study hard, get a good job, learn a trade, do the right thing, and you'll be successful. And so we were raised in a very linear manner, step by step by step, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay. And that's how our schools really are designed, right? There is a first period, second period, third period. There is separate subjects. There are right answers. And in many of our schools still, there's color inside the boxes. Right. And if you do all of those things, supposedly you're going to be successful.
Right.
Right? Well, his premise is that doesn't work anymore because we have global economy, we have Asia, we have India, and he said the bottom line is that anything like that can be outsourced or automated.
And is being done.
Right. And so he's really talking to people in the lecture he's giving on this CD that I reviewed who are looking for other, whether it be jobs, careers, or how to improve their business. And he says, if you're thinking about something, again, that's that left brain, automated, linear, step-by-step, mathematicians, engineers, accountants. He makes the statement he doesn't think there'll be accountants. It can be automated. But he said the bottom line is that we're looking now for people who can creatively think, who can design, who can problem solve, because the other things, again, can be automated or outsourced. And so really his school of thought here is whatever it is you choose to do, think about can it be automated or outsourced, but make sure it's something that you can be both passionate about and persistent. Mm-hmm. He goes on to talk about the baby boomer figures and why that's changing the world, so many of us retiring 55, 60, 65, and we've been brought up in this linear upbringing, do the right thing step by step by step. And now we're to the point of we want to do something that's meaningful. And that will change the world and change how people think. And I think he's right. But the point, I think, for people that we talk to, Tom, about people who are trying to look at different business opportunities or whatever, again, that he brings up, he says the problems are what he calls abundance, automation, and Asia. And again, this was from 2006, and most of it still holds. We all know the numbers about how many people there are in India and Asia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk about that when we were in schools, and we said, you know, there, if we take the top 15% of our kids, you know, that's such a small number compared to the top 15% of the kids in India or Asia. You know, how do we compete? And so, and then the other point he brought up was just abundance. You know, we have so much of everything, and the audience that he's speaking to, he says, raise your hand if you have more than two cars. You know, two or three. We have so much of everything. So if you're getting into a new business, the example he showed that I watched, in fact, I rewatched it this morning before the show, he brings up a toilet brush. He says, what's this? Of course, it's a toilet brush. He says, I think we've pretty well got the market cracked on, or the design code cracked on toilet brushes. There are so many toilet brushes. So if you want to sell toilet brushes, you're going to have to do something pretty much different in the design code. And because we have so much abundance, and I would even say we look at cars. Why do people buy cars? They're all going to run about the same. A lot of times it's for the design. Back to his point, I'm probably rambling with it a bit, but he's saying we have to not just have the left brain, mathematicians, engineers, accountants, Now students and people in our society need both. They have to be creative. They have to be able to design. They have to be able to problem solve. And the example he showed then is he brought a fly swatter, basic fly swatter. What's his sell for? 99 cents, whatever. And then there was a fly swatter that stood on three legs that you could put on a shelf or whatever. What's this stand for? Sell for? It was $14.99. So there had to be something in the design, right? That would, he said, and how much was this fly swatter made for? 2 cents. Well, 2 cents selling for $14.99. That's a good business plan. Wouldn't you agree, Tom?
I like that one.
So really, you know, it kind of, as we all are thinking about what do we want to do with our lives or what's the new thing around the corner or whatever, it was just food for thought for me again, that we've got to be more, we've got to look at things that aren't just lockstep, that aren't routine. He says that's probably the word that kills more careers and is the word routine. Don't look at something that's routine, but something that's creative, something that's meaningful. And I think that's true. And so I guess I'm encouraging that discussion, but also for people who are thinking about that.
What I'm finding is that there is a preponderance nowadays of gurus.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be a thought leader in their area of expertise. They want to be a thought leader, and they try to prove their thought leadership by publishing or being published, establishing their own blog. It's this preponderance of information because people want to be thought leaders.
Right.
They don't necessarily have a product, or their product is going to be this CD as an example from Mr. Pink,
right.
And that's his product. That's his back of the room. So when he's up front giving his expertise and
yeah.
people are going, I worship at the altar of Daniel Pink and all of his tremendous ideas. Oh, by the way, I have my products for sale at the back of the room.
Sure.
So that's the way it's going nowadays, is with regard to the information dissemination and the information age. And we, the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated, and with our Boomer and the Babe Network, we are information disseminators. We're plugging right into this thing.
Oh, yeah.
We want people like yourselves to be on our networks and giving your information
right.
and hopefully having an opportunity to sell your back of the room.
Right.
And that's part of when they say that we're not making anything anymore, we're not manufacturing anything, that's what we're manufacturing,
exactly.
is ideas.
Well, let's take your example. I don't know your background, Pete, but I'm assuming you were in radio before you did this at some point. Were you at all?
No, I just started doing radio.
Oh, well, I can tell you, I went to college to get into radio.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that was my degree, was radio and television when I first started college. And we went to the radio station, and we spun records at first, and we talked in between the records, and we read commercials, and or they were on an 8-track player. And then it moved to that the music and the commercials were on carts. They were called carts, which was an 8-track player, and it was kind of a loop and that sort of thing. But I always thought, boy, that's a great career. You know, I can pick out the record out of the stack. I can play my favorite records. I can talk and wow people and entertain people on the radio, and that's what I think I can do for the next 75 years. Well, for whatever reasons, it didn't work out that way, but my point really is the business of radio. How many radio stations now are broadcasting like that? I would say virtually none. You know, now it has been automated. You know, so many of the radio stations now are maybe coming out of Los Angeles, and you think it's your local radio station playing the music, it's automated. And so that whole business has changed, you know. You know, when I was growing up, they always said, get an occupation so you can fall back on something if what you want to do doesn't work out.
You know? Yeah, do whatever you want, but make sure you can make a living.
Right. Yeah, you got to, you know, and I remember going to college doing radio and television, and I got done early with my degree, and I went to my counselor and said, what do I do now? He says, oh, you should get a teaching degree. It's something to fall back on. You know, if the radio thing doesn't work out for you.
30 years later.
Yeah. Well, it was only about 5 years later I was out of the radio thing and doing teaching, which worked as my career for the rest of my 30 years anyway.
Yeah.
But it's funny how those work out. But I guess what I heard from him, which still kind of rung true from me, is, so now I'm a baby boomer and I'm looking at what do I want to do next. And it probably isn't finding a job that's linear, left brain, lockstep, routine. Just doesn't interest me.
Right. It's not going to be building the fences around houses like you did when you were up at your new home. That's going to be something you do on the side, and you say, boy, am I glad this is done, because I don't want to do this anymore.
No, I've been there, done that. I have the scars to prove
right,
it.
Right, but
yeah.
I think maybe that's the point.
Yeah.
Whatever you're finding, you're looking for something that maybe is a little bit more cerebral, I'm guessing, something that
right.
is not quite as physical.
And
something
creative.
That is creative and
yeah.
enjoyable.
Right.
And that's a different ball diamond to be playing on than the one you've been playing in.
Exactly. Yeah.
But one of the things that I've found, I do my teaching for victims of domestic violence, and one of the things I'm finding, here's a group of people in a room, and they come from all shapes and sizes and mental and physical abilities they need to get information to get a GED all the way up to they have PhDs. And so here's these people. And to the person, when I ask them, what do you want to do with your life? They all say, I want to help people.
Right.
So what my thing is, as being a thought leader or a writer of a book or something to sell, and then you have to know why you're selling it. I've already produced enough for my food, clothing, and shelter, so now I have to figure out, and that's what most retired people have done. Mm-hmm. They worked their lives, and now they're retired, and they want to find something. They don't have to produce money for their food, clothing, and shelter, so they think about travel and expanding themselves, and then when they're done with that, they figure out, well, I really want to help people. And I always say that to my group is, if it is to be, it's up to me. And that means fix yourself first so you have no needs. In other words, if you have financial needs or other needs, you want to look into the cause of it and fix that cause. And then, like yourself and myself, we have time to work with other people to help them. But it's like giving them a hand up and not a hand out.
Yeah.
So how do you get the people to move from thinking like what you're thinking and what Mr. Pink is talking about is how do you use your whole brain?
Right.
How do you not just go, this is how we've always done it, to how do we get America back into being the most productive country in the world? When if you do look at Asia and India and you see their A students outnumber our student population.
That's right.
You say, well, how is that possible? Because
right.
I've been over in China and see how these students are totally into lockstep. Now, it doesn't mean they're creative.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're being taught creativity, but it means they have tremendous amounts of information. But when it comes to having the creative side, they've got all that lockstep background that just flows mm-hmm. into the creativity side. So these are things that Americans, I think, and this is up to anybody, but I really want to have Americans, that's who I want to see, because we've let our country slip.
Yeah.
And the lockstep that we've been in linear teaching that has been going on hasn't kept up with what's going on in the rest of the society. And that's one of the reasons that I still have business enterprises that I'm working in. I'm very happy to be doing it. But the real thing, the real joy of things is going into a meeting with 20 or 30 victims of domestic violence and seeing the fact they understand that it is up to them and they can stop the violence that happens to them by saying no.
Yeah.
Life is two-letter words. If it is to be, it's up to me. And no, I'm not going to allow myself to go down this path because I've been there and it's no fun.
Yeah.
So they recognize that. So, you know, that's a roundabout way to come back to what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea is it doesn't matter where that person's at. We had a meeting last night, and this lady is talking. I mean, she's been a victim, and now she's a survivor, and I'm trying to give her some path to being a thriver. So victim, survivor, thriver, instead of victim, survivor, victim. And so what she was saying is so hard for her now because she's got three kids and has to get back into the workplace. Well, they're at a very large apartment complex. And she said, the biggest problem I have is when I go to work, the employers really like the fact that she has the ability to do the job and she shows up and she's a hard worker and she gets really good compliments. But she says her mind is being taken away because she doesn't know what's going on with her kids. So I said, well, why don't you go to the apartment manager who here in Phoenix is running about 70% occupancy, and that means 30% vacancy. I said, why don't you go and take one of his beat-up apartments and say, look, I'll help you supply the materials, I'll help get this thing turned around, and we'll turn it into a daycare center. So there's a large group of just the victims of domestic violence that are at that facility. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a few kids that could just go into that, which would allow the parents. But what we're talking about is just what you said, is they have to look at your own situation. Now, if you're a boomer and you're at the top of the boomer class and you're financially able, that's one thing. But with this, I don't want to get political, but with the economic downturn that our government's helping us do, there's other things that we have to do for the people that didn't make it to the top and don't have the resources. How do they get themselves out of it? And I think that's what I try to do with my book, is show people, define what success is for you and what does that mean. So exactly what you're talking about is using both sides of your brain. I've been taught to do step by step, and that's what my program is, actually a linear step. But as you see, there's a barrier to the things. You define what success means. And I was talking to a group last night and said, look, think of it as a hologram, and you're visualizing your life and see the kind of clothes you're wearing, what kind of car you're driving, where do your kids go to school, what is it that you want, and what do you need in your life? And then how much does all that cost? So what are your skills? It's SWOT, right? Strengths, yeah. Weaknesses, opportunities, and threats.
Yeah.
So I had them do that last night where they start looking at it, because the person was saying, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to sue my husband, and I'm going to get this. And so, but what are you going to do? How is that going to fix you? How is getting some money from doing something, is that going to change your life? You're going to be the same person, except you have money in the bank, and if you got a whole bunch of friends, a month later, you won't have any money in the bank.
Right.
So how do you do that? And that's what I think that you're talking about here, where you're using both sides of your brain. You get away from, I'm just got to do this next step. I have to do my survival. Yes, you got to take care of you first and make sure your needs are taken care of. So that, and do that, you look at what's causing you to have these needs, and then you fix that. Then you can start going to these other steps. But getting to be, I just call it being a clean machine. You know,
yeah.
You get yourself on a real nice track, and there is so much places like for volunteering and to do other things where you can really be creative. But it's just like you were talking about, you have a fly swatter for 99 cents or $13.95, and they both cost 2 cents. It's,
right.
Then it might cost a buck to market them, but it's the same thing with a watch. You can buy a Timex for $14 or whatever they cost, and it keeps great time, and then you can go buy a Rolex or something
right.
like that, and that costs $25,000.
But the point is, why would you not buy the Timex? And obviously, you've got to have something additional. And I think the point for the people that you're working with, that again I was reminded of, and some of it's Daniel Pink and some of it's experience and some of it's a lot of other
right.
people, is it goes back to what can you be passionate about and
right.
what can you persevere at.
Right.
And first, so whatever else I choose to do in my boomer age now, I want it to be both those things. I want it to be passionate about it, and not just today, but be passionate about it to persevere. Now, what Pink brought up again for me was, okay, I can be passionate and I can persevere. I can still fail unless I make something creative, unique, different. If I'm going to be a waiter at a restaurant and I want to go beyond that, I've got to make sure that I don't just be the waiter at the restaurant, but however I do it, it's got to be better, it's got to be unique, it's got to be rememberable for the right reasons, and that's why they're going to move me up or pay me more or give me more tips.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's twofold, and I think it works with the homeless victims and other folks that we've been trying to help out in the past, or it works for successful people. You've got to be passionate, you've got to be able to persevere. But then in this age of abundance, when there's everybody doing the same thing and there's the same product 50 million times, what is it going to be that makes me buy that one? And what he's saying is it's people's ability to also think with that right brain and be creative. You know, the last example I'll bring up from his CD, but it rings a bell for me. My wife likes to drink wine, not to excess, but she likes
yeah.
wine. I don't like wine, but she likes to drink wine. And she always says, you pick out the best wine. So when you're at the store, would you just get me the bottle? I said, what do you want? She said, you're always great at picking it out. You know how I pick it out? By the label. I pick out the coolest looking label. And then, so I'm listening back to Daniel Pink's thing. I probably have not listened to this since 2006. And he uses that as an example. He says, here's three bottles of wine. Blah, boring label. They're all Merlot or something.
Yeah.
And then blah, boring label. And then there's this kind of nice artwork on the front. And then he turns it around and he reads the back, and it's about two brothers who started this business. One's a tattoo artist, one's, you know, beer maker artist, I don't know. But that some of the proceeds are going to breast cancer, which their mother died of. Nice little story on the back. Great label. He says, which of these three do you buy?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and the audience says, no-brainer.
Yeah.
Right? What was the difference? We haven't even tasted these wines.
Yeah.
What,
and it can't be the worst tasting of the three.
Right.
Conceivably.
You may not buy it again, but you're going to buy it the first time.
The first time.
You know,
right.
And so that's his whole point, is all of those winemakers had the left brain capacity to do step-by-step winemaking,
uh-huh.
from fermentation or to growing to fermentation to bottling, right?
Yeah.
That was all the same. What got me to buy that bottle was the artistry, the
marketing.
The marketing, but it, which was the creativity, the right brain
yeah.
stuff, not the left brain stuff.
Yeah.
When Tom was, you were talking about Asia and them having the linear step by step, so on and so forth. Now, as an educator,
yep.
Terry, do you think we've gotten away from reading, writing, and arithmetic to the point that it's a detriment? Because that's that.
Yeah,
that left brain thing.
Yeah, that's the age-old question. Well, I don't think you're away from it. I think that we're not holding the high enough standards to master it. But I also agree we can't just see where people, in my opinion, as 30-year educator, where people make the mistakes or they're saying we're not teaching kids math and science and we're not holding them to the standards that other countries around the world are doing, blah, blah, blah. I think that's all true. Don't disagree with that at all, and I think that has to change, and people are working hard to change that. You know, but you've got to have good instruction, blah, blah, you know, and you got to have good social services and everything else to get kids to that level. But where I have more heartburn is that cannot be the sole focus, that all we're doing is teaching to a test so that we know kids know
right.
their multiplication tables, and we cancel the music programs and the art programs, et cetera. Because, again, I mean, and he's not my guru. It was just kind of interesting to hear it again. I think he was right on in 2006 for educators saying, unless you can have kids balanced left and right brained, you know, they can all add up the numbers the same. but somebody's got to put that in context and do something with it. So that's a, and you know, like any complex question, everyone wants to answer it very simply.
Well, it can't be answered.
No, it can't, because, I mean, think about our public school system, and I won't get on my public school rant, but what's made the what's made this country great is the public school system, that everyone had the opportunity as an education, correct? We all agree
right.
with that premise.
Absolutely, the premise.
Now you, given that, that's also what makes it very difficult. Everyone's there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. The abilities, the economic situation, home life, they're there, right? That's different than other countries, too. So it's awfully hard to compare, isn't it? And it's awfully hard to compare to the private school system then, which people love to do. You know, how come the public schools aren't as good as the private schools? It's a very, I mean, that answer is simplistic to me, and I'm not saying they aren't as good. It's, you can't say I have to educate everyone, and we do a great job of it, and as we should. And then this group educates those that can afford it, or et cetera, and make that comparison. Okay, there's my public school rant. I said I wouldn't do. But
it's
a very complex question.
Yes. Well, the reason I even kind of posed that question in the first place, based on what Tom was saying, is that I am blessed to have two beautiful granddaughters. One is 5, and one is just like 2.5. And the one that's 5 is a very intelligent child. I mean, she's a kindergartner in a private school, reading at a almost third grade level, but still developmentally she's the same as any other 5-year-old.
Yeah.
But that school, as an example, when she comes to Grandma and Grandpa's house and she starts writing her stories, she's writing phonetically. Mm-hmm. Okay? Boy, I tell you, and mother, her mother, my daughter, says, great job, Reese, look at that, that's on, or that's whatever the word is, phonetically. And I'm sitting here going, and I'm just biting my tongue because I'm saying, she's spelling that right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But that seems to be that right brain, left brain, to my way of thinking, now that you've mentioned it, that they're inculcating, incorporating into the educational system.
Yeah, very well could be.
And I'm not saying it's bad. It's certainly different.
Right.
And she is, I think, she's very factual. She's very down the line. She hates to be wrong. She's got to be right and be able to demonstrate that she's right. But on the other hand, she is just off in nary fairyland, and she's imagining and doing all her imagining. She's so much left brain and right brain.
Right. Sounds like a great combination.
Well, it is, and I think that's exactly what you're discussing.
Right, right.
And to kind of develop that way of doing things.
Yeah, and as educators, that's always was our goal, but also the challenge is obviously, yeah, you want to make sure kids can pass the test and that they have these basic skills that you're going to need. But how do you do that not at the expense of that right brain, those right brain skills, the creativity? I mean, what he says, which I think is true, it'd be wonderful if everyone could get an MBA and an MFA, a Master of Fine Arts, Master of Business, you know. I mean, what a great combination a person would have to make it successfully in the world,
Well, see, that's one of the things that I have in the book in second chapter. First chapter is visualize what success means to you, and the second one is have balance in your life.
Yeah.
And that can go to the entire thing that we're discussing here, is balance in your life is, do you want to just be lockstep, make money, do the best job I can so I get promoted and then they'll love me and then I'll just keep moving up and then I'll get a bigger car and then I'll get a $25,000 watch. What is it that you want? And then you have to be over on the other side of your brain where you're saying, okay, where's my balance? What is it that I, and that's why I say, write your epitaph today. You start out and say, what have I done today that is going to make me feel that my life was worthwhile? And what have I done in the past? So if I look and say, nothing, I've helped nobody, I've created some funds so that I'm financially okay, My family's financially okay. But when is it enough? And when is the things that you're doing not beneficial to the society that you're in? Because there's places that you can take that to the next step and figure out, well, okay, it's like us when we go and talk to different groups. I mean, you gave a fantastic lecture at RISE over at Rio Salado College, and you know, I talked to several of the people afterward, and they said, well, you know, I'm pretty old right now to employ these things. And my answer to them, well, have you done everything you wanted to do? Are you in this class because you're not inquisitive? Do you have no curiosity? And she said, well, no, I have curiosity. I said, you don't have to have the same energy that you had when you're 20, but being an adult and being a senior citizen, that just means we know how much energy we have and we get to direct it. So I think that's part of the balance in life too, is when I'm gone, what kind of a scratch did I make on Earth? Maybe it's not a pyramid that's 486 feet high, but it might be something where I've helped other people.
And that's why, I mean, as we all start reassessing again, and I can do it on so many fronts, but as a retired person now, a boomer age, I mean, that's exactly the questions that we need to ask. You know, I what is it I want to be passionate about, can be persistent about, but also that I believe is significant. You know, rather, I still say, you know, building the fence is a great thing to do for your mind, but probably not the
not
thing you want to do every day as a retiree, you know, but you can certainly your progress, and that was my point of that analogy. But
yeah,
but as we
great.
Think through this, and if we can use both sides of our brain throughout our life, you know, and again, as an educator, I hope our school systems continue to be able to educate to both sides of the brain. And I think our public schools, my last word on that, I think they're doing a tremendous job when, you know, we take all children to the public schools, and I think they're doing a great job. My only heartburn, back to that discussion briefly, it was just the comparisons sometimes that people try to make a very simple answer. And it's a very, very complex system. And I got to tell you, there's no harder workers out there than public school teachers and people that work in schools and bus drivers. And we're giving our most valuable commodity to them every day, our children or our grandchildren. And they're doing the best they can with them. Now, we're getting so much better at what we know and brain research, et cetera, and I think it's improving. I just would hope people would not try to make all of the comparisons and ask for just the facts. But if we can do that in school systems, we can do that as we're looking for careers. What can I be passionate and persistent about? What can and if I'm going to start a business, in this age of abundance, it better be something that's creative and significant and different. And now at my boomer age, same questions. What is it I can be passionate and persistent about? And what is it that I feel would be significant?
That I think is the key. When you get to be a boomer and you've taken care of your food, clothing, and shelter, so you got your material needs, and by that time we've stored up some assets and things like that. So what is it that we want to give back? Do we want to give back what we've had or the things that we've gone through or share our experiences? I mean, to me, experiences were my learning curve. Every time I would really make a big mistake and get whacked for it, I got experience. So I'll never do that again. But, you know, that brings you to a place in your life where you know some things that you don't want to do. But if you take and try to get this balance in your life of, okay, I want to help people. I want to help our country. I want to help the school system. I want to make a contribution so that when I'm no longer here, that something is that I've done is going to survive and benefit. And I think that's what a lot of this is because, and that's what I found out when I wrote the book. I wrote it for my kids so they know
what
kind of things I went through. But then when I've I've been negotiating with, I think that's the wrong word, I've been talking to several nonprofits about donating money, because the proceeds from the book go to help autistic kids. That's we have set up a program we've developed here at Sun City Country Club where parents can bring their kids to our club, and they go into 4 one-hour sessions of, on 4 separate days, and the kids learn a game of golf, and they learn two things. They learn in motor skills, which is very important because it's the only sport that you can teach autistic kids. They can't go and be in a soccer team, or they can't be on the football team, yeah, or something like that. But they are individuals, and they can work with this. Then the other thing is they learn social skills, which is one of the biggest impediments to their development. And so we've got these things set up, and when I was talking with the Kiwanis here in Sun City and Arrowhead, they're setting up a program to sponsor one of our programs. So as you go out and I talk to those people and tell them what kind of a advantage it is for these kids. And I don't know if you saw it, but it was on 60 Minutes last week. They had a program about autistic kids.
I did see that, yeah.
And
yeah,
how they're
segment.
Looking at their little iPad,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
they go from being non-responsive to be totally engrossed. They have tremendous brain power, and it's how you hook them up so that they can also have the interact, and this is what you were talking about, is how to get that balance. I mean, if you have this big, giant brain that's just chugging away, trying to come up with information and produce thoughts and processes, but you don't know how to interact socially,
right,
you're not in balance.
You're not putting it into context.
Yeah, and this is what we work with the autistic kids to make them be very productive and utilizing and harnessing their brain capacity. I think it's just what I'm, as a non-technical person, their brains are just not quite wired right. They've got this capacity, but they don't know how to put that all together. And so when you go to boomers that have gone through their lifestyle, most of them, it's the highest educated, most wealthy group that's ever been on this planet. I mean, in the history of humans, you guys are the best. And, I mean, that doesn't mean everybody's up there, but the top about 50% of them are quite wealthy and quite well-to-do, whether they had jobs or whether they had businesses. And now I think part of it is how do they get that balance in their life? How do they define success? Well, they had success and now they're retired, but how do they move to that next plateau, and what is it? And this is kind of what we try to do with it. I call it a journey of significance.
Yeah.
You go through your steps and you come out and you live your life well. What could be better than that?
Yeah, exactly. Pete, you were about ready to say something a little while ago, did you?
Oh, it kind of left me.
Pete's a boomer too, you can tell.
Exactly. I think what I was kind of going to get at was it is so individual, and but yet it's a conglomeration, and I was kind of thinking about this education. I seem to be dwelling in my mind this morning on the education thing. The public education system has got to teach to a common denominator.
Yeah.
There are people there are students at the bottom edge of the equation or of the class that are more difficult learners, they have other issues and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And they have those that are at the top end that are the accelerated students and so on. And the thing that makes it so tough for the public education folks is the fact that they are dealing with this wide, wide range of ability.
Everyone.
Yeah. Everyone fits that definition.
Exactly. So, right. I mean, I see it because, as I said, I've got a granddaughter that's on one end, and I got a niece that's on the other end. And my sister works with special needs children in the schools. And it is, it just absolutely has to be mind-boggling for yourself as a professional educator that how do you get to all these people and still do the art things and so on and so forth. And
that's been the problem.
And the social issues and everything that has to be dealt with at some level, the bands and the whatever else.
I'll tell you what I think. I won't call it the answer, but the goal is, and I hope it's in private education and public education, is you talked about the common denominator, but actually the goal would be that every student as an individual finds success. And so that's why now, and we've come such a long way with not just testing, but with research and how kids are learning, that you talked about two kids being at different ends of the spectrum. Whichever kid, here's what they're capable of and here's how I can test or here's how I can teach to it, and they can meet that goal and they can reach the best they can be for that individual.
Right.
I mean, but that's very difficult when you've got 32 kids sitting in the class. I mean, still you got to talk.
Yeah, or 40.
You have to teach to the class, but I think more and more with technology, more and more with research, teachers are really trying to develop individual. We used to just do this for special needs kids, individualized education plans.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the goal pretty much now of every teacher to have every kid on an individualized education plan to some degree that they can get the best out of themselves to be what they can be, because they're always going to be all over the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if public education does that, that's tremendously successful. But
that's
still
huge.
You take all the conglomeration of their test scores, that's not going to please people, because you're still going to have the student testing at 10% and the student testing at 99%, and you're going to have that average. And so that was always the frustrating thing for me. You know, if I have a special needs kid who can't read or speak, and at the end of third grade they can read and speak, and yet they're going to take the state test and they're going to score at 10% or 15%, and then the media and politicians come down and say, how come your test scores average 50%?
Yeah.
And the school down the street averages 60, or the private school averages 70. That's the frustrating part.
Well, one thing that I, because having watched it from afar, because my sister and her family are back in Michigan, but having watched it from afar, my niece, she's pretty much at the limits of her capabilities, I would think. I mean, she has better days than others, just like all the rest of us. But what I really appreciated, and what made it really, really encouraging from an educational standpoint, from a socialization standpoint, which is something that she has always been social, which is a blessing, really, for my sister. But the fact that when she had gone through as many years as she was allotted for public education, she got to walk and, quote, graduate, but without a diploma, with a certificate of achievement, that she has met all of the criteria to the best of her ability, but she got to march with her class, she got to go up on stage and shake the person's hand that was giving out the diplomas, and that meant more to her than you could ever imagine, more than you could ever imagine. And the fact that the education system has gotten to the point of recognizing this kind of stuff is huge compared to what it used to be.
It's
gargantuanly huge.
They're taking great strides. And then everything I said, obviously, which is touting educators, the bottom line, we as the public or parents or grandparents still have to have very high expectations and expect that sort of thing, you know. I know the other side, too. We can't just say you're doing the best you can, thank you.
No.
We've got to be involved, we've got to, you know, be watchful, and we have to really hold them to high standards.
That's letting the parents off.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
I mean, the schools don't have the kids all day, and they're not responsible for the kids all day, and they're not really responsible for their total education. The parent is responsible 100% for the education of their child. So if the parent, and that's what we're talking about, individually as a boomer or as a as a human being in this planet, and especially in this country, individually, we're responsible for everything that goes wrong or well with us and our children. So the blame game is very easy. But the honest answer is, if it's not working, look in the mirror. There's a person who's going to fix you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true, and I wish it was that simple when it comes to kids and where they're coming from and background,
and
et
getting
cetera.
Parents to be part of it. I mean, educators can't go into the home and beat the parents up because they're slugs. But
my summary, I guess, of that discussion, whether it be education or whether it be boomers, is we're really still talking about trying, whether it's teaching kids or in ourselves, to balance that left brain rote memorization linear thinking,
because
we just don't want to teach all kids the multiplication tables and say, look, all our kids can do that. Well, so can all the other probably third world countries almost by now. But then what can they do with it? That's the important
part.
What can they do with it? And so there you get into that right brain, that creative, that synthesizing, that stuff that we've been talking about. And if we can do that with every kid, first of all, to maybe their to their math science ability or whatever, let's say that left brain ability, and then maybe the relative you were talking about, Pete, then what can we do with that so that she can be a healthy, happy, productive citizen? That's the other piece, whether they're just starting school or getting through school or whatever their abilities may be. And then you take that exact same thought, I think, to us or to anyone who's out there saying, what do I do for the next part of my career? How do I balance that ability and use my skills to be creative and develop that to be successful?
Part of the problem, as I see it, not being an educator, but just being an observer of the human condition with our Boomer the Babe show and talking to any number of types of people, is that at some level, industry and business have caused the emphasis on the left brain
skill.
Mm-hmm. Because it's what's your grade point, where did you go to school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just recently, the colleges themselves, as I understand it, and the employers are also asking, what else have you been involved in? Have you done any volunteer work? They're starting to come around slowly, because they, I think, have to by necessity, so they can get that well-rounded individual that is going to be able to put their company over the top. Just the fact that they're sitting there in a little cubbyhole, a little cubicle, running
probably be automated and outsourced.
Exactly,
Daniel Pink would say.
Exactly.
I mean, let's. I don't know how much time we have, but let's look at Steve Jobs.
Right.
Now, people would say he was a technical genius, although from what I saw and what I've read, he wasn't the technical genius.
No.
Mm-mm. He was the creative genius.
Yeah.
And he was a hard drive driver, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of good or questionable abilities that people have brought up, but the bottom line is he certainly had that creativity, that synthesis of ideas, and that passion and persistence, right?
And the vision.
Wozniak had technical stuff, right?
Yeah,
and then
right.
He took the technical stuff and said, no, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to get more and more and more and more. And Wozniak was able to produce for whatever stresses he was put under, he was able to produce.
So,
and then
a high school dropout.
Exactly.
Bill Gates. Not high school.
Not
college dropout.
College dropout.
College dropout. You can never say you don't want kids to have good grades and get a college degree.
Right.
But again, aren't both of those really, and there's a million others, examples of people who were able to bridge that gap into that creativity to get past that abundance and make the unique product and make the desirable product and make that $14.99 fly swatter that people would pay for rather than. Right? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
See, I look at it, too, is people don't need to have this abundant life where we're using up more resources than we need to. And I'm not a minimalist, So I'm not talking about that. I think you should have a house down here and play golf. I think you should be up at the lake. I mean, I think that is abundance.
Right.
But you're
as long
not,
as they're playing on your golf course.
Well, that helps me out. But the point is that's why you strive to have a few more things so that you do work harder so you can have some material things. I'm just saying that I went through a material part of my life, and I'm 20 years older than you, I guess. So, you know, the material stuff isn't as important anymore. And if I could have learned that earlier, I'd have been so much better off. You know, because just striving to have more and more and more, it just takes you to the other thing. And it's what you're talking about, creativity. And some of the creativity that we're looking at is how can I create infrastructure that helps and makes this planet better? Because, like, when I moved to California as a 3-year-old child, there were like one person for every 4 people that are there now. And, you know, this beautiful, pristine state of California is pretty crowded right now. So, I mean, as we move and the population in the world, what's it, doubling every 30 years or something? I mean,
could be
it's huge.
I'm not very left brain, so I don't know those numbers things.
Well, yeah. Well, the point is that we're accelerating our growth as there's more people here. And that could be something that people could look at, a boomer could look at and say, look, I got myself taken care of, and I'll take care of my grandkids and spend a little bit of their inheritance, but, you know, got them their education and all that. Now, how can I make this better, and how is that going to affect me and what I want to accomplish? And just exactly what you're saying, how do I get this balance in my life? How do I write a plan to have these things that I want?
And something you can be persistent at. You know, the last thing I've really got on the topic, but it's a new little thought from, it's not new, but it was a good reminder. Just for the heck of it, I got on danielpinks.com website, and I said, has he got any new books or something out? Because I just haven't even thought about it since 2006. And he had on his front page, he was interviewing or talking with Peter Bregman, who is a consultant strategist, and he just wanted some quick advice from Peter Bregman's latest book or whatever. And I'm totally paraphrasing, and I apologize to both if I'm misquoting. I know I am, but the idea is sound, I think. And they called it like the one hour ding or 1 hour alarm.
Oh.
And he said I start my day every day with a plan and a to do list. That sounds familiar,
yeah,
Tom?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Right.
You've been around me a long time.
And we preach that to everyone. You know, have your plan, your daily plan or to do list. And then he says, so I start my day, and I put in my mind, or I don't know if he was talking about actually putting it on his computer or his phone or whatever, but every hour a ding goes off, and he asks 2 questions. Am I doing what I need to be doing, and am I doing what I want to be doing?
Wow, that's powerful.
And if I can stop for every day of the hour, one ding, because we all just waste time, in essence. And so he was taking Daniel Pink's stuff, I believe, too, and saying, we've got to be persistent, right?
Yeah.
We know we're passionate, but unless we're persistent, the way I retain my persistency, I think, is what he's saying, is my 1 hour ding.
Uh-huh.
And the one, you know, and I thought, boy, if I could do that, I waste so much time out, you know, doing nothing. Of course, that's why we're retired, right? But if you had
choices,
a goal, and you had the plan, and every hour you could stop and just stop yourself. And he says, sigh, take a deep breath, and ask those 2 questions. Am I doing what I need to be doing? Am I doing what I want to be doing? Okay. Next hour, we'll check again.
Yeah.
It is. It's just a powerful little thing, if you will.
I mean, that is very important. And I don't think I'm capable, but I don't think I would do it that often. But I try to do it in the morning, every morning, am I on the right path? Am I being productive? Because that's how I was raised.
Right, sure.
And so, you know, marching in a straight to get to my goal. And now on my creative side, and like I started to say about the book, where at first it was to reach a certain audience, and now I'm finding that as much as it works for people that are in business, it's even better for people who are thinking about being in business that don't have a background in it. And it's such an easy way, primarily because I've taken what other, I'm not an original thinker, so I take what other people have said and the gurus that I've lived under, which is Napoleon Hill. He's my main one. I read most of them. But the one that influenced my life the most was Napoleon Hill. And then take what he said, but then look for why didn't it really, I mean, his things he said, make money, I was okay doing that, and it worked for doing that. But what about balance? What about what I'm trying to give back? What about the scratch I'm making on the earth?
Right.
You know,
right.
What kind of pyramid am I going to leave? And I think that's, if you do that like a ding every hour, that's going to be pretty intense.
Yeah.
You know, but
I think I would have a lot of meandering between the dings, but that's just me. But still, it would probably get me back on track eventually. You
right.
know.
Right.
Well, it's interesting, sociologically speaking. Now, the way you were raised, Tom, is certainly different in some ways than the way you raised your kids. I would venture to say that the way your kids are raising your grandkids is different again.
Right.
And the ideals might be the same as far as the basic thought process, but the way of getting from point A to point B is certainly
changing.
A lot different.
It is. See, and what I've always thought of is that, and in talking to my parents while they were alive, as when I was an adult, they were saying that most of the things they did in their life was exactly the way their parents did it. So,
yeah,
they didn't have the information blast that we've had. You know, I mean, I'm one of the people that was, I saw the first TVs that came out. I mean, I was born in 1938, a year before TV was invented, but it didn't get into the public's hands till the early 50s after the war. And as this technology blast that's going on, I was talking to a gentleman today, and he said, all the things that we have with our iPhones and our computers, and Google and those companies will be out of business shortly because they've got a new type of iPhone that you just talk to it and it looks up information
right.
for
yeah.
you, and
yeah.
it just
is
going to come back, and you're going to have all this data
yeah.
just by talking to a machine.
Right.
And he asked me, well, you're starting this business and you're trying to do this thing with the book, and I mean, how are you going to get through to people? There's going to be no advertising, because how can you have advertising on that, and how are people going to make money from all this technology? Well, that's how do you harness the fact that people can get all the information they want and have that, and how they raise their kids different because they have more technology? Well,
facts are free now.
Yeah.
Anything are free.
Anything
you used to have to go to the expert to hear the right answer.
Right.
Right?
So gurus are not necessary.
You went to the guru.
Yeah.
Facts are free. Anyone can look them up now. You know,
The information's out there. But the actual part of what you're talking about is how do you set your clock so that you every hour you get a wake-up call that you are going toward your goal? How do you actually, even though the facts are out there, there's so much information, and then how do you separate it from what you want, and where do you draw the line of I'm not using my left and right brain in a proper order?
And, you know, I'm interested now. I've got to go back and look up more of Peter Bregman's stuff now that I've just heard those two things, because I would bet he also talks about the balance, or why would he ask both questions?
Right.
In other words, if you or I are out on the golf course tomorrow and we're out there for 4 hours, I hope four times when I ask the question, am I doing what I want to be doing, the answer is, heck yeah.
Until it goes into trees.
Right. Yeah. not at this moment, but I'm going to change that right now. I'm going to put it back in the fairway.
Now,
yeah.
You know, and we just got back. We've got a lot of cleaning up and grunge work to do. If I ask myself every hour, am I doing what I want to be doing, that answer is going to be no, but probably am I doing what I need to be doing? It'd
yeah.
be yes. But then I better get to the point where I can say I'm doing what I want to be doing. So I'll bet it's a balance again.
It has to be.
And as we talk about your book or how we present or the information we've talked about today, no matter whose information we're talking about, we're always talking about that balance, whether we call it left or right brain, whether we tell it work or play, whether we call balancing our lives of chapter two of your book. Isn't that really what we're talking about? To be successful, you've got to have the balance, no matter which words
that's,
you put
that's
to
that. It. Because
yeah.
It's not all about one thing. It's about having total balance in your life. And when you're over and you pass through the life, you don't want to get out there and look back and see if you did it right. But I would just like to close up and say that I would like people to be able to go to successorfailure.org. And we have you can purchase the book as an e-book for what? Is it $9.95 or $9.99, something like that? And get an e-book, download it. Or you can pay the full thing and get a hard copy. Either way, you get free mentoring with myself or Terry. If you have any specific questions, you can contact me at successorfailure.org, tom@successorfailure.org, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions and help you on your way to do what Terry's talking about, not only using one half of your brain, use the whole thing so you get balance in your life.
Yeah, Tom and I are a pretty good balance in that sense. He's the more of the left brain person, and I'm more of the right meandering about. But we get there together, and
yeah.
So if we can help you out by the combination of us, it usually works.
In any case, though, you've got to start.
Got to start.
Start is the word.
Okay. So here's three little things. Start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can.
Today.
Yeah. I think that's a good one to close on. Anything else, Tom?
No, I'm fine.
Pete, thanks for joining in with us and also for producing the show. We appreciate
it.
Hey, and we want to thank you for joining in and listening today on Success or Failure with Tom and Terry. We hope you'll join us next month. We usually are live at 9 a.m. on the last Wednesday of the month, or anytime you can join us at www.blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. In the meantime, feel free to comment, join us in the discussion by emailing us at successorfailure.org. And once again, this is Dr. Terry Munther and Tom Legering reminding you that success or failure, the choice is yours.
You've been listening to Success or Failure with Tom Legering and Terry Munther. Success or Failure is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.